Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Jane doesn't mind an apartment with no elevator.
5 flights of stairs is 5 flights of cardio.
Bob is a little less enthusiastic about stairs.
I hate stairs.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle renters and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Jane and Bob found an apartment that's a 4-story walk-up. And Bob?
Yeah, there's a freight elevator she doesn't know about.
What were you talking about?
Nothing.
Bundling without compromise at geico.com.
The podcast no one asked for, but you want it anyway. It's the Bits and Pieces Podcast.
Thank you, Timmy. Welcome to Bits and Pieces, the podcast that revisits our favorite Bob and Tom Show comedy bits. I'm here with Jess Hooker, Jess Alsman, Jason Hofsetz. I'm Willie Griswold. Today, we are talking Tim Wilson with the very funny, very inside the Bob and Tom family forever, Mr. Ron Sexton.
Hey, yeah. Thank you, Willie.
How you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So we're talking Tim Wilson today. I knew Tim since I was a kid. Ron, I think you're here because of this Bob and Tom family. You were working the road with Tim a lot, right?
Yeah. I consider Tim to be my comedy dad. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's what I tell people. Yeah. Because he was, I went from being a weak middle act or feature act in Indianapolis and not really having, you know, at the time I had my fourth kid was on the way. So I was like, man, there's no way that I can, at that time I thought, you know, the only way I could do comedy like most others is to be gone, you know, Wednesday through Saturday. And it just wasn't going to be conducive to my lifestyle at the time. But because of the Bob and Tom show and because of Tim's tutelage, I was able to get on the Bob and Tom tour at that time, which was really popular and would only be Friday and Saturday nights. That was very doable.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great for me. Tim was the one that gave me the confidence, and I was very sheepish going in because I knew how much disdain he had for Larry the Cable Guy. And and so one day we're on the road, and I said, I just have to ask. I mean, I know you don't like Larry, but why would you like, I mean, we get along pretty well. I mean, what's it, why would you like Donnie? He goes, well, hell, because Donnie's the heckler. You're the heckler that made it to the stage. So I was like, oh my God, he defined what I do. I didn't even know that, because I wasn't quite sure what I was doing, but I'm like, oh my God, that's the best economy of words to describe what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it gave me clarity. And then he got a kick out of Donnie, but we really hit it off. You know, and again, when you're on the road, I mean, just any number of things to kill time, but there was never a better conversationalist in history,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so we really hit it off. And so when one of my highlights was show gets canceled one weekend, and for whatever reason, I'm kind of stuck with Tim. You know, mm-hmm. it was, you know, I would always drive. And so I thought, well, heck, my youngest son's got a basketball game. And he said, well, hell, let's go. So we walk into this middle school basketball game, and I feel like I'm walking in there with, you know, a combination of Clint Eastwood and Waylon Jennings, and just every head turning. And then immediately he said, hey, about five of these little a-holes need to take basketball lessons again. You know, I'm like, oh, cringing. Tim, it's not really a travel league, but he would sit there and, you know, scout and gauge, and there was nothing that he did lightly, you know.
By the way, both of those were two amazing stories, but part of me is a little distracted because your Tim is just so locked in and so perfect.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I've always had, if I am around, one of my first jobs in radio was running the board for Rush Limbaugh. And just, you know, if I'm around something, I just kind of learn how to imitate that. Same with, you know, with the Pacers. I'm Mark Boyle from the Pacers Radio Network. Tonight, the Pacers and New Jersey Nets will play. Slick, baby. Yeah, we need Reggie big time, baby. Yeah. So all I would do is sit there and do the halftime stuff. But just if I'm around you long enough, I usually find a hook or some kind of a blueprint to doing the impression. So
it's funny, after this I need I want to figure out how to imitate something. I need you to run tape on it and tell me how to do it.
Yeah
because we all do impressions of you doing, you're literally our Dana Carvey.
Yeah,
you know, we're always doing impressions of you doing impressions.
Oh, I got
somebody.
You
right.
Yeah, and that's a lot of times that's how it happens. If I hear somebody do an impression, I can kind of figure it out, but sometimes it starts with just a word, like Charles Barkley. It was so cool, you know, cool, the way he would let cool sort of ride. There's never a rush. Can you imagine Charles call it 911 trying to describe the emergency? It would take days to explain who's hurt.
Oh my gosh. We love Chuck Rand. I'm a big fan of NBA on TNT. And I always talk about this. Everyone makes fun of Shaq. That man is 10 feet tall and weighs 700 pounds.
Yeah.
We only get so much time with him. Let's be nice to Shaq while we still have him.
No kidding, right?
That guy's heart is working overtime, pumping blood down his extremities.
Oh, gosh.
All the extremities.
Well, let's not focus on Shaquille O'Neal today. Let's focus on Tim, and we're going to start off with a Tim Wilson song.
He'll beat you to the emergency room and paint a devastating picture of pain and gloom. He'll hate to hear all about your wreck, but deep down he's kind of happy that you broke your neck. He's almost a doctor, he's worse than a crook. He's the lawyer on the back of your telephone book. He can cry on cue and he can lie to your face, and he can probably get you a bigger neck brace. That made anybody that he won't sue. He'll get the radio station you was listening to. Listening to, and if picking up your sisters in the police report, he can probably take that boop to court. Dick Weasel, attorney at law, if you're in the body cast, he's the man to call. He'll sue your boss and your mama and them. He can make a preacher want to injure him. He'll take him to court. He'll get you the cash. He's the Johnny Cochran of the bull whiplash. He's the slickest lawyer that you ever saw. He'll have you eating jawbreakers through a straw. He's willing to grovel. He's willing to beg. What would you say to a broken leg? We could get a fake cast put on your hand that might be worth another $2,000 or $3,000. He'll take him to court and get the money real quick. He'll tell the judge that he's worried sick and find the sawbones to claim that your vertebra's bent, but you'll have to cough up another 10%. Dick Weasel, attorney at law, he's F. Lee Bailey with bigger gall. He can make a 12-man jury squall over a compound fracture or some bad coleslaw. And Dick Weasel wants a third of this song.
Tim Wilson, Dick Weasel. That's incredible, man. I hadn't heard that in so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you take any of his songs, like one of my favorites, he's my brother-in-law, and just the lyrics are incredible. Tim told me that when he would write, when he thought the song was perfect, he would throw a big wrench in it and rebuild it. But and so if you think about that, most people, you know, and I've tried, I'm too impatient. You know, if I find a decent rhyme or writing a parody or whatever, I'm just not as patient as he was. But he was just, there's nobody better in my opinion that, that just found the funny, but he was patient to find the funny. And I think, you know, and I don't play guitar. I think that helped. It was funny that he would have certain song ideas would just come to him just by kind of strumming. Some of his best stuff was in the green room, you know, and then it would just be, you know, one reason or another that he would have the courage or the interest to take it to stage, you know, but yeah, man, nobody better when it comes to writing, you know, parody songs.
Well, with that one, he hits it. Like, of course he hits everything perfectly comedically, but it's one of those things where you can tell that it was rewritten because he saves the name Dick Weasel. That's the biggest punchline. And he saves it for the first line of the first chorus. And that's like comedy songwriting 101. That's what Second City, SNL, watch any of those. That's what's going to happen. And Tim just did it absolutely perfect.
But then he could do Church League Softball Fistfight, which is the title right off the bat, and then, you know, destroy you that way too. So yeah, I mean, like I said, he was, and I know that people think, oh, he has the country twang. He was asked before if you could have a beer with anybody, dead or alive, who would it be? And, well, it'd be Barry Gibb. You know, and it's like, what? Yeah. What? You like the Bee Gees? Well, damn, the Bee Gees. Huh? You know, but he loved the Bee Gees and loved Barry Gibb, you know, and yet there was nobody that knew more about, you know, Skinner and the Atlanta Rhythm Section. And, and certainly he made Jesse Hooker cry in the car one time doing, he was playing a song by the Possum.
Yeah, he stopped loving her today. And he just, and I lost it. And so anytime I would be like stressed in the green room or you know, trying not to kick somebody's ass or doing whatever, he'd just start to strum and I would be like, don't do it to me. Don't do it to me. Yeah. But I mean, and he nailed that song. And yeah, every time I hear it now, I think of Tim.
Do you want to open up a little bit about you as the Bob and Tom, the mom of the Bob and Tom comedy tour, rounding up all those egos and all those maniacs?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of times I was with Ronnie and Tim and it was kind of the three of us because we were the only three that were out weekend to weekend to weekend. The other comedians would kind of rotate. So it would be Chick and Christy hosting and they alternated. It was like we were divorced parents and we got Christy and Chick every other weekend. Yeah. And then, you know, it would be a slew of other comedians. There was a rotation. There was a group, a pool that we would pull from, and depending on people's schedules. And so, yeah, a lot of times on a Saturday morning, we'd be up at 8 o'clock in a rental car. Oh, sorry. I think that's the first time I've done that. But it's hard not to say the F word before you say rental car. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, so
should be a brand or an option.
Right. So we were, yeah, we'd be on the road for 4, 5, 6 hours sometimes. And yeah, and so it was a really great experience. I still say that if it wasn't for that, I think that honed some of my comedy chops, to be honest. I mean, I would never claim to be a comedian. You know, I work for a comedy-based show. Mm-hmm. I've worked for a lot of comedians. I would never claim to be that, but I know that, like, you have to be quick. You have mm-hmm. to be on your feet, and you have to have a thick skin to deal with that many egos. And I'm not even going to say that many. I'm going to say Drew Hastings. To deal with Drew Hastings, you have to have a thick skin. You know, he and I could be like, in all honesty, we were never chest to chest, but like my chest, his belly, and me just screaming like, get off the stage, yeah. You know, like you ran over, you cost us $3,000, something like that. But yeah, I mean, some of my best memories are being on the road with you guys. We had a blast.
Yeah, we're 20 minutes late to get to the, is there a Starbucks nearby?
Can we stop at this Walgreens? Yeah. I need baby powder for my hair.
Dead serious, yeah. I remember before he took the stage in Toledo, he asked one of the stage, what is the racial overtone of Toledo? And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, usually the comedians would be like, hey, can you find out like what the sports team is and you know, what the most popular road is or what the bar people hang out at so they can reference it in their material.
I call that road Mad Libs. Yeah. Okay, what's a football team that sucks a county over?
Exactly.
Okay, what's the beer that everyone drinks in town?
Yes, instead, Hastings would ask questions like, what is the racial overtone?
Yeah. Of Toledo.
Yeah. Of Toledo, yeah.
From some dick named Travis who just moved there. he didn't really do a lot of vetting when.
And that was, I mean, did Tim do much local stuff? I mean, his stuff was so good, it didn't matter where he played it, right?
Well, that's the thing about Tim is that he was such a history buff. Mm-hmm. And, like, there isn't a part of this country that he hasn't been through or performed in. So he knew a little bit about everything, I always felt. Like, he would tell me things about a city that I didn't know that we were in. And I did the research.
Yeah, no awesome. Doubt.
Yeah.
But he said it best. So he said, I'm basically only funny around land that's been plowed. Put my ass in New York, not too damn funny. Put me in Carlock, Illinois, my ass will sell out of 500
theater. That's true. And we were on the road with Timmy when he was writing his book.
Yeah.
And that was a wild ride. I actually just found my copy that he wrote in for me.
He one morning I thought he had overslept. Mm-mm. And he didn't sleep at all. He comes out of this hotel, and we're sitting here going, oh, no, we're going to miss our flight. Mm-hmm. And called the room, and he was pecking away, and he goes, I just solved a 23-year Ted Bundy case. Yeah. We'll be fine. We get to the airport, I'll tell the pilot what I just solved. He'll wait. And but, yeah, man, he...
He would be up all night and he would call me and then he was like, hey, cancel my flight or don't worry about me. I'm hitting the road. I'm going to the next wherever it was that there was a murder that he had to do some research in.
So like what? Like there's like newspaper clippings and red pieces of yarn going from
100%
other
much
really?
Like that. Yeah.
No, I was just being silly.
No, he had notes.
He
yeah.
He was in, he left a gig one time and sweetie, I'm not coming home. I need to head to Jacksonville. There's a car that I believe Bundy owned, and he went and bought this car that was submerged. And Bundy would confess to a lot of his murders by way of art. And Tim would analyze this artwork, and there was in one of Bundy's drawings, and this is when my jaw dropped, was a pair of little cowgirl boots. Mm-hmm. And he said, Ronnie, look at this. What you see little cowgirl boots? And I said, well, when you kind of turn it this way, he said, well, Bundy isn't just going to spell it out. You have to sort of look from the side, you know. And so he'd kind of take a picture and you'd turn it and say, yeah, those are little boots. And there was like a little Western design on it. And sure enough, they get the car. And in the trunk of the car, when they open it, were little girls' boots and turtles had eaten the soles off of them. But he was able to use that to connect that Bundy had either sold this car or at one time owned it and committed a number of crimes in his hometown, Columbus, Georgia, but was never charged with them. And he even proved that Bundy broke out of jail and broke back into jail, mm-hmm. and in between committed another murder. But yeah, there was nobody that knew more about Ted Bundy. And I, same thing. I said, Tim, why do you like me and not Larry the Cable Guy? I finally went, I said, what's the connection with Bundy? And he said that he was about, 14, 15 years old
in
court.
The courthouse? Yeah, this is a great story.
And was in line. He said, you never forget your first prostitute. And so he and his father were in court for a case, but the case in front of them was a prostitute. And Tim says, you know, you never forget seeing your first prostitute when you're that age. Well, it turns out she was later murdered by Bundy, and he believed that God put him in that spot at that moment to one day later solve some crimes that I think they placed on the strangler or something or other. But a guy named William Vance went to the electric chair for these crimes.
Isn't that
Bundy
wild?
Got away with, yeah.
I know, cold chills, right?
Yeah.
It's wild. But Tim's book is called Happy New Year, Ted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's available on Amazon if anybody's interested. I don't recommend reading it before bed. Mm-hmm. I learned that the hard way. Yeah, some nightmares, yeah.
If Tim Wilson was here, do you think he would start a true crime podcast, or he just like crap all over the people that are doing that, calling them amateurs? And
I don't know that, you know, there would have been, I know Tim told me that Marty Bender, when Marty was here, tried to get in, and I think those with Premier Radio approached him about doing it, his own talk show.
Huh.
But Tim didn't really want to be bound to that. I think he was fine being a guest, but I don't think that the fun for him was kind of the free balling, so to speak, of going about it when it would interest him,
yeah.
You know, and it was one of those things that I right now miss him more than ever, because I'm finally getting into this.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I did my big GFK stuff, and now I'm into West Memphis 3 stuff. And I know that he would have certainly had a strong opinion on that.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, so I'm going down my true crime avenue right now. It was funny. He and I was just starting to get into Elvis. I'm still into Elvis, but when Tim and I were road dogs and I was just really getting into it, and he's like, well, I sort of went through my Elvis stage, right? About the same age. You'll get over this. There'll be a time you just go to Graceland, fine, but you don't need to, you know, look for Scylla. You know? But now I'm under the true crime stuff. Not that I'm going to write a 700-page book about a serial killer like Tim did, but
right.
I do have an interest in a lot of those unsolved cases.
I know you and I, and maybe this is, maybe Tim is our base, but we equally enjoy conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah.
Just tell me about it. I love to hear people's. Yeah. I love to hear new ones, all that.
Yeah.
Do you think, where would he be? Because there's so many now, or they've become very popular, more popular than they used to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Tim was my last conversation with him, and actually kind of broke my heart, because I felt like I had read a book that I felt put the JFK thing to rest.
Right.
And he didn't want to open it up. He was of the belief there was one shooter. Yeah.
And,
well, I believe Posner. If you want to go against Posner, you're about a POS. But he believed Gerald Posner's view of it. And so he didn't even, I gave him the book, and I could tell he wasn't going to read it.
Really?
You know, but it was case closed to him. But that's, I so wish he was here now, because I would definitely love to pick his brain. And I'm sure that he would have moved on to something else.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine, Tim, sir, your mask, you need to wear, ma'am, let me talk about it. My ass is a mask. You know, I mean, there's a reason why Tim and James Gandolfini were taken early. They wouldn't have survived in this, you know, this wouldn't have suited them well.
Yeah. These restrictions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on to our next bit. This is Tim as a spokesperson for Bob and Tom.
According to studies, millions of Americans aren't getting enough sleep, and it's affecting their health. If you're waking up tired every day, you'll want to listen to this important announcement.
Hello. I'm veteran road comedian Tim Wilson. And when I'm out crossing this great country of ours, I'm not sleeping in some luxurious four-star hotel.
No.
Hell, I ain't even catching a few winks in a flea-infested rent-by-the-hour flophouse. No, I'm sleeping in my car. And after 25 years on the road, my back was killing me. But not anymore. You heard of them Sleep Number beds? They ain't just for the bedroom anymore.
Oh.
It's the new Tim Wilson Sleep Number car seat. With the Sleep Number car seat, you don't have to worry about reservations, vacancies, or smoking laws. You just pull into the nearest truck stop, rest area, or darkened parking lot, dial in the comfort level you want, and you'll be fast asleep in no time.
I like the Sleep Number car seat so much, I bought the whole damn company. Get your Tim Wilson Sleep Number car seat today. Available anywhere they sell road maps, auto air fresheners, coffee, and sun lamp hot dogs. It's only $19.99 and comes with the Tim Wilson Garandam Tape. I'm so sure you'll love this thing. If you don't get a better night's sleep in your car within the first week, call me and I'll meet you at a rest area and give you your money back.
Don't spend another night tossing and turning in your front seat. Go pick up a Tim Wilson Sleep Number car seat today. But remember to bring cash, because we don't take personal checks or credit cards.
I do not believe in credit cards. That's the first step towards each of us getting stamped with a number. You can look it up in the 13th chapter of Revelation. Uh-huh. I ain't going to hell over a car seat.
What about a Social Security number?
Just shut up and finish the damn commercial.
All right. The Tim Wilson Sleep Number car seat. Go out and get yours today. Sorry, you apparently can't call toll-free to order one. Can't have a phone because they got numbers.
Are you looking for an ass whooping?
Sorry.
I love announcer Dean giving him the business. My goodness, that's funny. Tim Wilson, the Sleep Number car seat. Ronnie, did you guys ever crash in a car together?
No, never did. But my favorite Tim car story, though, didn't involve me. Tim had gotten mixed up and just thought that... there was a miscommunication. I think he thought we were in San Antonio. It turns out we were in El Paso, and then the next night we had to be in Beaumont, Texas. And he didn't fly. He drove, and he said, the biggest mistake, I might have taken my little son, Ari. And at this time, Ari looked like Rocky from Christmas Vacation.
He's little, yeah.
And yeah, but it was Tim left the stage at our show and drove through the night.
Yeah.
This is before, and I guarantee you, he didn't have GPS on his phone. This
no,
is,
Andy didn't, and he let his cell phone die, and I was supposed to call him every 3 hours to make sure he was awake through the night. So I had to set the alarm on my phone to make sure, okay, wake up, call him. Call him at 1 o'clock, call him at 4 o'clock, yeah. You know what I mean? To make sure he stayed awake.
Sure.
In a pickup truck, a single bed pickup truck with him and Ari. Yeah.
And he arrived in Beaumont just in time for soundcheck for the next show. I mean,
yeah,
he drove
just walked on stage. Yeah.
And you had no idea where he was, obviously, till
no.
he walked.
Yeah, there's no way he could have sent me his location or know that he was okay. At one point, his phone dies through the night, so I have to wait. You know, they stop and eat or charge the phone. I don't know, but yeah, it was.
So, Ron, he had no GPS, obviously no phone. He wasn't a big phone guy anyway, but he eventually got a cell phone, right?
Yeah.
But he did not use it as a GPS, nor did he have a third-party GPS
No.
unit.
Yeah, I can tell you, I never saw Tim, you know, flick through a phone like, you know, most of us spend our time, you know, kind of thumbing through a phone. I don't ever recall him. He would use it as a telephone.
Right.
And
sometimes he didn't even have it for that. He'd be like, hey, I need to call Sweetie.
Yeah.
And go, you know, Jesse, give me your phone.
Yeah.
So did he just have a Rand McNally Atlas, or did he just know the country so well that he just...
I think he trusted road signs and instinct.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know that he would have had... He may have stopped and ma'am, is this 75?
Yeah.
You know, I could see him doing that.
Yeah.
That happened on more than one occasion where I think maybe he would strike up conversation or not be afraid to ask for help.
For sure.
But yeah, that's that is a true story. And like I said, he found a way to get there. So...
That's because as a person that since I've had a license, I've had GPS on my phone the whole time. This is like a Frontiers person to me. This sounds like Lewis and Clark to
me.
I know it sounds weird, but I remember when the first season, at least, that we were on the tour, a part of my job was printing the MapQuest and giving it to you guys in your show prep. You remember, you would sit in there with me and I would MapQuest our route for the weekend.
Every turn.
And
right?
I would print it off, and that was what I had to hand Ron, Chick, and Christy before they'd take off. Yeah. And it was just, and I know now I'm just like, oh my gosh, MapQuest.
I have friends that are so bad, they can't even get from home to work without using their phone, like a 15-minute drive.
What?
Oh yeah, just because we never had to.
Your generation sucks so hard.
You think my generation sucks? Go talk to a 17-year-old. My goodness.
Yeah,
oh, sorry. That's the exact age of your child. I'm very sorry.
No, it's okay.
I did not mean to.
We have 18-year-olds. Yeah, we have 18-year-olds.
Oh, he's 18. Thank goodness. My bad. I didn't want to just shove your son's age back into your face.
No, it's okay.
So did you like ever hand Tim the instructions, the directions, and he's like, it's okay, sweetie, I got it.
No, he was usually actually in the car with me.
Oh,
he would be riding with me. There are times,
gotcha.
Well, you guys know this, he would drive up on like a Thursday or at some point, and we'd show up to work Friday morning, and he's asleep in the Suburban in the parking lot, waiting for us to get off the air so that we could leave and head to the gig.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I always heard, and I probably heard it from you guys, if he was traveling alone, that he would sleep in his car, in his Sleep Number car seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in his right hand, he would have, would he have a little help in case he was in a bad neighborhood?
A weapon?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if he did.
Why did I always hear that? That he like, he was able to sleep,
you know,
and
what?
He had his...
I know why you think that. I bet Mike Armstrong told you that.
It's probably just part of the folklore of Tim Wilson. When you're Tim Wilson, there's a lot of legends that get passed around.
That's why I'm asking. Yeah, I didn't know.
But Tim was usually riding shotgun with me, so I guess play on words, yes, he was okay. Because he was riding shotgun. But yeah, it was... Yeah, I don't know about that, but I know that Scotty Bratcher, who Tim believed was the greatest guitar player ever, was Tim's last road dog. And if you ever get a chance for Scotty to show you when Tim would drive, that he had this entire routine about, we got to get these damn vents, right? And he would kind of almost like a magician, you know, trying to, have a lady levitate. And he would have these hands kind of doing a little shimmy. Well, Scotty, you get down on your side. We need some more air stirring. And he wouldn't put the car in reverse or drive until the vents were right. He kind of did a sound check with his air conditioning.
That's an old road dog. Knows what he wants.
Yep.
All right. Well, this is another fan favorite. It is Tim Wilson as Uncle B.S.
Joining us in the studio, comedian Tim Wilson is here. Tim, how's your Uncle B.S. doing?
Well, he's doing pretty good.
He's famous for his stories, I know.
Well, you know, you get that relative in your family that lies like a dog. Everybody's got that guy. My family's name was Benford Smith Wilson. Kind of got slept at the YMCA a lot alone. You know the guy I'm talking
That's
about.
That's a good look.
But anyway, you walk up to him and, Uncle B.S., where were you in the summer of 1956? Summer of 56, city bus driver, Montgomery, Alabama. Pressed for the steering wheel, trying to get a 14-year-old to turn Elvis down so I could figure out how many black people I can squeeze on and still have room up front for the white folks. Best-looking woman in North America crawls on my bus, peroxide hair, legs up to her hind end, 40D cup, staring me right square in the eye. I'm hoping she'll sit in the third seat from the front, my eyeballing seat. I look up in the rearview mirror, damn if Rosa Parks ain't in my eyeballing seat. Now I can sit here and look at Rosa for the next 15 miles or get her to get up and give Miss Nude Alabama her seat. Rosa knows I ain't had a date in 6 months. Picks today to turn into a civil rights murder. Just goes to show every time I see a good-looking woman, somebody makes a federal case out of it.
I mean, there it is. Who puts themselves into history better, Forrest Gump or Uncle B.S.?
Right?
My goodness.
Right?
He was most proud of that, too. I remember, again, one of my last conversations with him was Tim basically said, I'll put my Uncle B.S. pretty much up against anybody else's top piece. You know, he was really proud of that. So that was kind of his franchise thing, you know, without a guitar, you know, in terms of just a straight stand-up. But he was really proud of that entire franchise.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's hard to do because you need to be smart enough to know your history, and you need to be, you know, sort of talented enough to tell jokes with racial nuance. That's not an easy joke to make.
Yeah.
I would never, ever do a joke about Rosa Parks right now because I'm just not good enough at comedy. Yeah.
Right.
And Tim Wilson knew that he had the stuff to do that joke and make it work. Also, real quick, my eyeball in seat.
Right.
Hilarious.
Yeah, right.
Just there's a bus driver. Yeah. He's kind of a creep, and he's got a seat that he looks at to check out the ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
I love it. Kind of spoke a little bit to the fact that Tim was a bit of a horn dog. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely.
Tim had a very specific type of woman, and he would talk about, like, if her ass is good at 20, her ass is going to be good at 40. Yeah, like, I remember him saying things like that.
You remember, too, on Chick's podcast that he declared, he said, when I go down on a woman, I do it like I invented it.
Yeah.
And,
100%.
And that was a true statement.
Yeah. And he was very suave. There was, you know, that he was very charming. He was very charming. I mean, his wife, one of the most beautiful women I know.
Yeah. And she had worked for a hockey team, I think, in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And happened to be in Nashville and was watching a hockey game.
Yeah.
And Tim, you know, was certainly struck by her. And so he approached her and she's like, who are you? You know, here comes Hillbilly. And he said, well, ma'am, see those people lined up around them? They're here to see me.
Yeah.
You can either watch at a hockey game or you can get in line, but I'll make sure you get to the front line. And so he kind of swooned her right there. You know, she had never heard of him.
Yeah.
And there at Zanies in Nashville.
Goodness.
Yeah. And I honestly, I don't know if I've ever seen two people more in love.
Yeah.
I mean, they loved each other. Yeah.
I mean, the guts that takes alone just to walk up to a beautiful woman, but then for it to actually work.
Yeah. Well, I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah, confidence goes a long way, Willie.
Okay, no, I feel like you made it personal about me. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say something directly to you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm so sorry.
Things aren't going well with the ladies there, Jess.
It was odd seeing, you know, it was the first time I had seen he and Sweetie together was on a Bahamas trip.
Yeah.
And it was seeing Tim out of his element, like in shorts, and then because Deidre would kind of dress him. You could tell that it was different than the road. And then we go up by the pool, and Tom is staring at Tim's feet. He's staring at Tim's feet. And he said, Tom, I know what you're doing. He said, see, I have boot feet, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm not lucky because his feet were, you know, for years in dingo boots or whatever. Right. So wearing a pair of flip-flops was very out of Tim's element. You know?
I'm sending Tim to the spa to get a pedicure. Those toes, by the way, earlier you're talking about impressions that we all fall into.
Yeah.
A little cornerstone to find the rest of the impression. At least for me, for my dad, it's the, I have to speak to my lawyer, you know?
Do you think that we noticed that, or do you think Chick noticed that, and then that's how we start the impression now? You know what I mean? Because Chick's always done, and then gone into
Song. But a lot of people forget that right before Josh came on full time, he made a living for a couple weeks doing this, making fun of Tom. Like, it went over really well.
Really?
And all of a sudden, a month later, he was full time.
No kidding.
And I'm not saying Chick didn't, but I think Josh made it famous.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
I absolutely remember him sitting right there and him doing it.
Oh, so when it was like his interview time.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
That summer. Because he came on full time in August. So I bet it was probably like June or July.
So somebody should have told Dyer to just make fun of Tom.
Exactly.
Okay.
Little inside, little fun.
I thought he was doing a Glenn Beck impression. I'm so confused. I hate pop quizzes.
All right. Well, let's listen to another one of my favorite things in the world. It's a song from Tim Wilson.
I got combat training from overseas. Now I'm the bouncer at the Chuck E. Cheese. I think I'd rather do a year in jail than another afternoon in Chuck E. Cheese hell. Chuck E. Cheese hell. I'm in Chuck E. Cheese hell. We cater to a snot-nosed clientele in Chuck E. Cheese hell. Mama drives Chipper to the Chucky Mall, watches him waller in some plastic balls. The band sucks and the pizza's cold, and you eat it with a slobbering four-year-old in Chucky Cheese hell. Puke with pepperoni still smells the same. You waste a paycheck on a video game. Lined up out the door like the Stones are in town. Ain't enough Chucky ass whippings to go around in Chucky Cheese hell. I'm in Chucky Cheese hell. Squalling youngins and a skee ball bell in Chucky Cheese hell. I did two tours of duty in Vietnam, fighting jungle rot and breathing napalm, but they couldn't torture me half as well as little birthday poops in Chuck E. Cheese hell. Chuck E. Cheese hell. I'm in Chuck E. Cheese hell. I need a Chuck E. straight jacket and a padded cell after Chuck E. Cheese hell.
I think that's the second time we've heard him beep himself. I think he did it.
Well, it's
because
he was a total pro.
Yeah,
and he knew when he was working radio to turn it off and even get a laugh out of it. Better than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That song is brilliant.
Oh, yeah, it's
great. In a couple ways, it actually has a catchy melody, which a lot of comedy songs don't.
Yeah.
And I it's my personal favorite Tim Wilson song.
I don't want to reset up the setup here with, you know, but I guess I'll pay ode to Tom that I don't know if we touched on the fact other than you just went into Donnie Baker. You are Ron Sexton. You do a lot of voices for the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just a quick introduction. But I feel like the people that are listening to this show kind of know, you know, but what other can you rattle off a couple of other characters you do for us?
Yeah. Kenny Tarmac and let's see, Dr. Phil. Lily, I've been doing my pillow. I just went down my pillow. I don't know. I just see I love my pillow.
You've done like three of those call-ins. It is so weird.
It's bizarre for me too. Trust me. I sat on that for a while.
He's always got another thing to say.
He's in such a rush.
And you did. Obviously, you do Barkley. We covered that. And you also do Gandolfini.
Yeah, take it easy. Right here.
So good.
My favorite's Floyd.
Well, Floyd Candy came to me on the cat. My grandmother being from Salina, Tennessee. I'd go, hey, brother, see, go to the courthouse, see the old boys witnessing at the courthouse, and I'd kindly listen to them talk about it.
So yeah, Floyd was one of my friends at the time. It was Trucker Steve on the AM station. Mm-hmm. But Tom had we're in the parking lot at Loon Lake Lodge, and he, oh, how about to have Floyd Trucker, the world famous trucker? Perfect. Floyd, yeah. Tucker, the world famous trucker. Perfect. Sounds great.
Yeah.
And so he really nailed it, you know, right away. Same with Kenny Tarmack. Originally was, I kind of SNL'd it. It was, hey, I'm airport guy.
Yeah.
Right. And Marty Bender, no, we got Kenny Tarmack. And I was, yeah, oh God, nailed it. You know, perfect. So you just,
yeah,
kind of know.
Yeah.
You know?
Man, that guy is so real. Every airport I'm at, there's a Kenny.
There is, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, it's like it's airports, and it's also like business bros and, yeah, salesmen. I don't know. Which is one thing, really quick. Mm-hmm. I want to put. There's a little Venn diagram.
Yeah.
With Floyd the trucker and James Gandolfini, and where it meets in the middle is the breath.
Yeah. Right.
You have this 100%. Amazing breath work that you do in your voices that is so subtle. But I know, yeah, that me and specifically Josh Arnold, whenever you do the Floyd the,
yeah,
breath, yeah, Josh, we get a really good
kick. I thought it was his trach. Does he have a trach?
I think it's just it's biscuits and gravy that have just not quite made finish,
yeah,
the journey.
Gotcha, you know? Gotcha. I remember hearing a lot of conversations between you and Tim in the green room, like that. I mean, you two, he really contributed to Donnie Baker.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he gave you a lot of feedback. What was the biggest thing, like a big aha moment for you and your characters that Tim contributed to?
Yeah, for Donnie, it was just, you know, Tim's approval and watching him laugh from the side of this, it was all I needed.
Yeah.
But in particular, it was a funny story. So I have a joke is Donnie regarding a topic. And so Tim, he said, he comes into the green room, he said, Ronnie, $20. I just wrote the best damn joke in your set. $20. I said, okay. So I give him $20. He said, he couldn't wait to get it out. He's like, Patty Ferguson. And he's laughing. Doesn't matter which triumph. Patty Ferguson gave me so many hand jobs last summer, she had to get Tommy John surgery. And I laughed, but I said, but Tim, I have a joke already about, you know, Donnie's had Tommy John surgery on both knees. He said, screw that, man's better, $20. That's a true story, so yeah. But he got a kick out of writing Donnie jokes.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And this is a true story. This is where Tim, the only time we really got sideways, this is a true story, though. We're checking into a hotel, which was always the worst part. It's still the one thing of traveling, mm-hmm, that they've not been able to somehow expedite in a quicker fashion is the hotel check-in process. And there's no way around hearing the lady tell you about the breakfast buffet. And I'm pretty sure I can figure out the breakfast buffet, but you have to, you're trapped hearing this.
Yeah.
And it was one of those days we're just road beaten weary. We want to check in. And the week before, Tim had given me a joke for Donnie. And the joke was, it was an old joke that he had used. He said, you ought to use this, that you went on a date and your girlfriend wanted you to take her to the most expensive place to eat. She's sure. demanding, I want to go to the most expensive place to eat. And he said, you can do one of two things. You can say, well, we'll just stay here at the airport or a Yankees game, right? Mm-hmm. So a week goes by. We're checking into a hotel. He was road weary. I mean, we're all beat, but I'm just, you know, stalling while we're waiting on our rooms to get ready. I said, oh, Tim, by the way, I used that joke for Kenny Tarmack last week since he travels. And I had to kind of jog his memory. And I said, yeah, the joke you gave me about the airport. He said, I didn't give that to Kenny S. I gave that to Donnie Baker. And he was mad. And he was really, yeah, he was really upset. And wow. it ended as quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
But Scotty Bratcher said, if you were... if you were on the road with Trent Tim and he loved you, you would almost at some point or another come to blows almost. There would come a time where you would almost fight.
Yeah.
And that happened. That was probably the closest. Not that I was going to fight, but I mean, he was really upset that I didn't apply the joke with the intended character. He was really upset by that.
Fighting is caring.
Yeah, it is. For some people. It is. Yeah. And Jason and I had this conversation the other day. I always think of Tim and, you know, watching him read a room when there would be a bunch of comedians and he would just be observing and who's saying what. And if you said something that he didn't agree with and he liked you, he would teach you. If he didn't like you, he would school your ass in front of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a very, very distinct difference.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You were getting the same information, just two different ways. Yeah.
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 No doubt. He got in John Evans one time, and this is one of my favorite Tim stories. We're on the road, and John is just kind of needling Tim, yeah. And it's passing the time, and I'm driving, and this was so long. I have Sony headphone Walkman, like yeah. headphones on, that I'm just driving listening to music because they wanted to talk, and they were talking about the greatest pure athlete ever. The greatest pure athlete ever, and Tim was fond of Herschel Walker, being from Georgia, and John Evans is going back and forth about who he thought it was, Bo Jackson, and So they go back and forth, and then it goes into the JFK conspiracy. Sure. And then they're arguing, so we go from greatest athlete ever to JFK conspiracy, and back and forth and back and forth. So I'm tuning in, and I'm tuning out. And then John, it's getting heated. He's in the back seat, and he's kind of putting his finger in Tim's face. And Tim turns around, and he's hollering at him. And I'm trying to remember to the athlete, because the punchline here that it absolutely has to happen. It'll come to me. Athlete. He was Indian. We're talking the 1930s or whatever, 40s.
Cleveland Indian?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. The Jim Thorpe.
Jim Thorpe. Yes. Thank you, Willie.
Yeah.
And so we go, great athletes, the JFK, and I take my headphones off, and I just hear Tim's big paw point. He goes, and by the way, Jim Thorpe can kiss my ass. All the way back to Jim Thorpe. So I apologize for the, milk
of amnesia,
but that's a true road story.
I just like to imagine you with your headphones on.
Yeah.
And you don't even know exactly what you're like. What do you mean Jack Ruby's the best shortstop of all time?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what it was kind of like.
I have, so just real quick before you go to the next bit, I have one Tim Wilson story, and it's not, you said he would school you. He would school you. This is sort of the opposite of that. One time, I'm in studio before school. Jimbo used to work here. He's about to drive me in. Mm-hmm. But Tim Wilson is talking to me. I am writing a book for fifth grade. It's just a little, you know, 10-page story, whatever it is. The story I'm doing is about these kids that find magical instruments in a home. It's like Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, but for rock and roll instruments.
Okay, cool.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And then the big thing at the end is they all learn how to play Layla by Derek and the Dominoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling Tim the story. That's a great story, Willie. And he goes, just wait 1 second. And then he calls Bobby Whitlock.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to call Bobby Whitlock.
Yeah.
Who played, he's playing keys on the version of Layla that we all know. Dun, 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 dun. And at 7 a.m, he calls Bobby Whitlock. Bobby Whitlock picks up the phone on speakers. Bobby, I'm with a young man here who wants to know about rock and roll.
Oh, my
God. Oh, yeah.
Jimbo's standing in the corner like, hey, Willie, we got to go to school. Dean's standing in the corner going, Tim, we got to get you on air so we can plug your dates in Dayton or whatever the hell it is. Yeah. Man, just the greatest.
I was at a gas pump one time, and he's on the phone. His Chris DePetta had mailed him yet another phone.
Yeah.
And, and you know, he's smoking right here by pump four. I better finish this cigarette. And and he goes, well, he said, I guess about 4% will be fine. 4 or 5. I trust you. I trust you. Yep, that's fine. We'll see you soon. I said, who was that? Well, it was Toby Keith. He just wanted to, I wrote a song called High Maintenance Woman Wants to Date a Maintenance Man.
Oh, yeah.
And, and so I was right there when they cut that deal, but it was Toby Keith on the phone.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
Jason. And just the way that like he talks to Toby Keith, the way he talks to a Bobby Whitlock is the exact same way he talks to one of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so he was in the same way that he had integrity for that joke that he wrote for Donnie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He has the same integrity with everybody around.
Oh, so true.
When he's in front of your face, he's in front of your face, and it's just you and him.
Yep.
All right. Well, here's another one. It's a full band production.
Telling me every move to make. And I'm tired of Martha Stewart's ass telling me how to bake a cake. And I've just about had my fill of Dr. Phil. Tired of looking at Tiger's ass and Shaquille O'Neal. Paris Hilton could up a county fair. Just proof that you can be stupid, still be a billionaire. I'm tired of Simon's ass telling people that they can't sing. I'd fire Donald Trump's ass for knowing every thing. Jim and Brad and Angelina's ass, I'm about tired of looking at them. And I'm about ready for Hollywood's ass to run out of film. Tired of everything on TV. Everybody loves Raymond, except for me. I'm tired of that Lance's ass in France riding on a bike. And I could pretty much give a damn what some actress's dress looks like. It'd be nice if hip-hop's ass would finally learn to play three chords. And I'm about fed up with Nashville. Phil's ass and hand me a trophy award. Barry Bonds hitting a bunch of fake home runs. And a fake ass Larry the Cable's ass. And get her done. I'd like to watch football's ass without worrying about T.O. And I'm resolved to tell W's ass where the he can go. I'll be the first to second telling the third world what the they can do. It'd be fun to watch Mel Gibson's ass get whipped by the Jews. I'm tired of my own ass singing this song. There's a lot of people's ass I'm tired of, but the list is too long. And I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Tim Wilson, I mean, that is just incredible, especially nowadays when folks just worship celebrities, it seems like. Just Tim taking them down a peg, yeah. You know, being just being himself.
And that song's over 15 years old, and about three quarters of it still applies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. He has another country version where he really rips on country music. It's called Way, Way Out in the Country, and I love it for the very reason. He has such venom for what country music is. I think, Jess, you were in the car when he had said, country music's supposed to be ugly. Have you ever seen Waylon Jennings? Right. They didn't have designer jeans. He looks haggard. Yeah. So was Merle, you know. Right. Yeah. But but it was really funny because if you listen to the song, I mean, it was just his, like I said, venom in motion toward what country music had become. And so, and Deidre told me that Tim was at his funniest when he was at home just, you know, cursing at the television. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm sure that, you know, it didn't matter who popped up on TV. If he was tired of seeing him, that applied too, and certainly was the inspiration for that song.
It's a real, I mean, we keep saying this, it's funny, but it's also a really damn good song.
Yeah.
And I like that he goes for country, and he also goes for hip-hop.
Yeah.
And I like that he goes for Paris Hilton, and he also goes for George W. Bush.
Right.
You know, it's all aspects of punching up. It's all aspects of idolatry and all this weird stuff that we deal with nowadays. Mm-hmm. Man, I miss Tim Wilson.
Yeah. I know.
And the fact that he was on Capitol Records, right? I mean, how did he get a deal with Capitol Records?
I don't know, but I know he was very proud of that because I'm on the same, ma'am. If he would go to that if somebody would have, I'm on the same label as the Beatles, ma'am. Yeah, he was really proud of that. So
one of my favorite lines in his stand-up was I'm certified, or what is it? I'm certified to teach your child English.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
he was an English major.
That's so funny.
By the way, just for folks keeping numbers out there, if you're in your Bits and Pieces Fantasy League, we have mentioned Shaquille O'Neal twice today. Didn't think that was going to happen.
There
an episode about Tim Wilson, but we have mentioned Shaq twice today.
That's so funny.
I would have loved to see Tim in the studio in that, because I got to see him in this studio, got to speak with him on the road, those kind of things. But man, seeing him in an element of where people were probably, you know, Tim's probably looked down. You're just the artist. You know, we take care of this kind of thing. Yeah. It would have been interesting to see how he operated in that.
Oh, absolutely.
Arena.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he got to play with a bunch of musicians that he adored, right?
Yeah, it wasn't until after he had passed I'd stumbled upon a mini doc that I think Ari did, but it was Tim producing a serious song for Sophia, his daughter.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see him in that element. But he was in that mode. I guess in the studio, it was, you know, not a lot of laughing. I mean, he was all business in the studio.
So Ari and Sophia are currently working on a documentary, and I think that it's scheduled to launch like within the next few months. I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah,
but
this was a different one. This was one that Ari had put together I think he had started working on it before Tim had passed and then finished it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, but it had some footage I had never seen before of Tim in the studio not doing a comedy record.
Yeah.
And then at his funeral, I know I came to learn that he wrote a good many songs that weren't comedy songs.
And that's a position that he was an amazing dad. Mm-hmm. Like I know all dads love their kids.
Sure.
But I remember at his funeral, Sophia spoke and she said, my dad always said, just write for me, just write for me. And I just like that still, I think about that. I think about how he encouraged her, how he wanted his kids to be creative. He believed in them.
Oh,
He loved them so much. And I just,
Yeah, he told me a story once. Ari was in Little League. This is kind of funny. And Tim had called me looking, I think, for Just an ear to Ben, because I think he felt like he had crossed the line. But he wasn't quite sure. He was also very righteous in his argument. So he goes, he shows up, he said, hey, Loretta, tell me, if you show up to your little son's baseball game with a six-day beard, a trench coat, and you see some team mom take a clipboard and hit your son over the head, what would you do? And I said, well, was he wearing a helmet? Well, it didn't matter if he wears a helmet. Yeah, but he's on deck. And she's like, well, you need to pay attention to your old neck. You'll be coming up to buy it. Stop playing with the other kids. I said, ma'am, if I see you hit my little son with a clipboard, I'm going to kick your damn teeth in. Next thing you know, there's police and damn SWAT team. I'm a six-day beard in the middle of holding court. But that's a true story. And so he was making sure that he didn't cross the line, I think, because we both shared a great passion for baseball. And I was just getting into coaching at that time. But I think he wanted to make sure that that I wouldn't approve of someone, you know, taking a clipboard and hitting a kid over the head. And I said, no, that's out of line. But so it's threatening to kick in someone's teeth. Yeah, that's beside the point.
You know, I would never get in the middle of Tim Wilson in anything.
Amen to that, man. He got into a little tussle in Nashville, a heckler that Tim dragged out.
Yeah.
And Brian Dorfman bailed him out of jail so he could finish the second show.
Yeah.
And Tim, he was all cowboy.
That's a quick turnaround.
That is. Yeah. They agreed. Well, they said that they basically said after the second show, you're going to jail. And but I wouldn't have wanted to tussle with Tim. He was, you know, like I said, he was all cowboy. But the mistake he made, and he knew he made the mistake, was he left the stage. And he can't leave the stage. But that was another one that...
I would have loved to have seen that second set that
time. Oh, I guess...
You think I care, ma'am? I'm going to jail. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's what he would have said, right?
Absolutely. That's when you need one of those Chappelle thing where you go for 48 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And just delay. But
that's
yeah.
fantastic. Gosh.
Well, hey, you know, it's one of the best when he's up there. So when you stick, you might as well just stick around up
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember there was, and this wasn't anything involving violence, but it just kind of defines Tim. I'm backstage at one of the old theater, a Houdini theater, and it's, you know, it's bright, sunny day, but, you know, you go into these theaters, once the door shuts, it's as dark as night. And I'm backstage with Tommy Jonigan, who had just, you know, joined the tour and very funny. And we're there for sound check. And then right up on us, because it's so dark, you hear these boots and these footsteps. And it was Tim. And all you see is a lit cigarette. That was the only light. And Tommy goes, oh, my God. Did you see? He goes, I could never be that cool. How did he? We didn't hear a door open. Did you see a door open? How did he? He just kind of came in. It was like Wyatt Earp just went, you know. And it was true. He just had. And it's because Tim, he's asked up trying to be cool about 1975. I'm basically, you know, basically he didn't change. He was, you know, he wore one shirt. We're like in Eugene, Oregon, and he's starving. So he goes to see, he's the one guy that is Subway that goes, just put anything on there. Just make sure it's a lot of it. You know? And so they loaded up the first bite. There's this, you know, it's like somebody curb stomped a go-gurt. And he had one shirt. And he goes, well, damn, I just got mustard on my show shirt. And Christy goes, isn't that your only shirt? He goes, Christy, it's still my damn show shirt. So that's a true story.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have a couple more bits. This is the next one. This is Tim Wilson playing the Sam Elliott role.
There's times when a man wants to sink his teeth into something that's so good, so unforgettably delicious, so darn tasty, that denying him even one flavorful moment would be akin to stealing his horse or insulting his mother. That's why when I have a hankering for hearty, hunger-satisfying food, nothing better stand in my way.
Well, well, looky here. Somebody done left me a big plate of grub. Don't mind if I do.
Cowboy, you take one more step and touch these, and you're going to lose a lot more than just your reaching arm.
Aw, you're yellow. You ain't got to...
Wow.
Girl Scout cookies. It's what's for dinner.
Nothing better. So funny. That Sam Elliott, my Sam Elliott impression is just him backing out of the driveway in A Star Is Born when he cries
just a little bit.
Have you seen that part of the movie? Yes.
Is that you every morning leaving for work?
He's backing up.
just one single tear, and then I go, hey. Yes, that's what I do every morning. But yeah, that's really funny. And then, of course, you told the story about Tim spilling on a shirt. Then we go into a food bit. Works out pretty well.
Uh-huh. And his voice, man. It's just something about his voice.
Yeah.
I miss his voice. The thing I miss most is I think about him a lot. And when I hear people saying they're genuine, oh, man, that's such a genuine... Tim is the bar. As you said, he hadn't changed since 1975.
Yeah, I noticed. I you know, when I worked in the building at the time, I would come down and just watch. You know, I would love to watch the great ones, especially how they would interact with, you know, Bob and Tom. I grew up listening to Bob and Tom. They were icons, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but I noticed Tim every time. He had been on the show probably, I don't know, maybe not more than Haywood, but probably not far from it. But every time he would come in, he would still get up. Tom, thank you, sir. And walk around. Bob, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
And shake their hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and just he was a true Southern gentleman. But it didn't matter how comfortable he got or how popular he was. He would get up, tip his cap, you know, shake their hand and mm-hmm. do all of that before he believed. And I just, you know, I mean, you can learn a lot from that Southern hospitality. I think it certainly, like I said, he was my comedy dad, but I find myself saying yes, ma'am now. And I never said that most of my life, but
right.
Yes, ma'am. It's kind of fun to do. Yes, ma'am.
No, it's a kid. I mean, he's like 22 or whatever, but a newer comic emailed me the other day. It was like, hey, what advice do you have? And it's just, hey, you got to write a little bit every day. You got to get up as much as you can and just be nice to people.
Yeah.
Being nice to everybody around you, not just the good comics, but being nice to the servers, being nice to the booker.
Yeah,
it is such a big deal. And also, not just a comedy hack, just be nice to people, folks. Yeah, my goodness.
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything. But in terms of comedy advice, I heard him tell somebody some great advice for comedy. Take something you believe in deeply and argue against it, and you will have written great comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim told that to somebody. And if you think about it, I mean, it's really great advice. I mean, it's going to force you to look at something from a completely different angle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, and a lot of what we've heard today in his songs, you know, there's probably a lot of stuff that Tim, you think, oh, my God, he must hate so-and-so. No, it's just that's where the joke was.
Yeah.
So. I mean, that whole I don't think that Tim had any actual hatred in his heart for Paris Hilton. I think it was just a lot of apathy that sort of wound up in that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was the face of where television, the reality stuff was going at that time.
And, exactly.
And it was just very shallow TV. And I think that was what bothered him, you know?
Yeah. And really, I don't think he gave a damn about her as an individual.
You're right.
It was just the effect that she was having
and
her point of celebrity in that point in time. But I don't think you're actually hating an individual because of that for a silly song, you know?
Yeah.
Was it not Tim Wilson that wrote into, I think, a Flying J corporate office just to tell them how clean a bathroom was at a rest stop he went to?
Or wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Gave
them
all the compliments like, oh, no, it was the best one I've ever seen. I need to let them know.
Yeah, I believe it.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I believe that.
Which I always think about when I see a clean bathroom. Like, I should let someone know.
But I just love that he's such a big guy that Jason has this sort of legend about him. You have this sort of legend about him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Johnny Appleseed or whatever. There's a line between
fact
and fiction when it starts to become a fairy tale or a fable, whatever.
Yeah.
Mine is all from the fan standpoint. I never got to work with him. I saw him walk out the door a couple of times carrying his guitar case. And I'm like, there goes Tim Wilson. That's so cool. And I always, you know, geek out when he was on, because it's, you know, our family would sing all the songs at the table. If someone brought up something, it's like, I only know NASCAR names because of Tim Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point.
So funny.
Okay, well, we've got one more bit to play, then we'll have a little wrap up here. But this is, you know, I think that we have to play the Tim Wilson disclaimer.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on The Bob and Tom Show are not necessarily those of Bob, Tom, Christy, or Chick, or anyone else on our staff, or the staff of the radio station you are listening to. In fact, these opinions, particularly those expressed by Tim Wilson, do not reflect the beliefs of most clear-thinking people and should be taken with a grain of salt, or perhaps several pounds of salt. Thank you for listening to the show, and please continue listening. Remember, before you know it, Tim will be gone and we'll resume our normal program. Hang in there, America, and thanks for your patience.
Hang in there, America!
The Tim Wilson disclaimer, just because we might have to play that, just to be safe.
Right.
But hey, if you guys want to check out any of Tim Wilson's stuff, Jess, where'd you say they can get the book?
It's available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Happy New Year, Ted, is the name of the book. You can get that. Yeah, like I said, Ari and Sophia are currently working on a documentary. Longer format, sounds like.
Yeah, the trailer is really good. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's. I had never seen. Yeah. I attended the funeral, but not the graveside service, so I'd never seen his tombstone.
Yeah.
But it's at the graveside. But I don't want to spoil it for you, but you can find it on Facebook and social media.
Yeah, Ari actually just sent it to our producer Dean, and we're in the works to have them on the show. So yeah.
Have you guys seen, it's behind a door in Mark Allison's studio.
Yes.
We have a bunch of artwork that's, you know, big. It used to be on the behind Chick and Josh on the walls here. And they're what are they, 2.5 by 2.5?
Probably,
square.
Yeah.
And there's one of Tim that he signed.
Oh.
And I don't know when he signed it exactly, but it said, thanks, Bob and Tom, for always treating me like Elvis.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I've always thought, because Ron, you're a big Elvis guy anyway.
Yeah, that's how he really is our Elvis. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
But a lot more accessible, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Well, and then just one more thing. I know it's, I'm not trying to send people to a different podcast, but I remember right after Tim passed away, I was just getting into comedy, and I was listening to an episode of the Mark Maron podcast with Billy Gardell.
Yes.
And Billy Gardell tells the same story. Yeah, Tim took me under his wing.
Yeah.
Tim took me on the road. Mm-hmm. He had all these conversation in cars with him. And so it's so interesting to see that he was always out there helping younger comics.
Oh, man. He was always more devoted to making sure others got. And same with Scotty Bratcher. He would, you know, he was convinced Scotty was the greatest guitar player on the planet, and he would, you know, really support Scotty, and he would be leaving a pilot truck stop, and somebody would recognize Tim, and he said, "Hey, you don't care, but Scotty, go get that guitar, play for you." He said, "Tim, we're just here to get gas. I don't want to play. I'm not going to play Joe Bonamasso for these people we just met."
Right.
But yeah, with Billy Gardell, he told his agent, he said, "You got the next Jackie Gleason right here."
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Tim was very instrumental in his success. And I know maybe more importantly at the time was they were so poor. They're on the road. Billy has a toothache and they couldn't afford x-rays. And so he said, "Oh, we don't need it. Open your mouth, Billy." And Tim tells the dentist, "It's that one right there." So use his eyeballing seat to see where the cavity was.
Oh, my God.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my God. This was great. Anytime, man. I have absolutely loved this. This has been, I'll talk about Tim Wilson all day.
Yeah. So I love hearing all the stories. This is great.
Yeah.
I think there's enough material and just enough stuff of his we could play. We could do a part 2, part 3.
I've actually not told 5 stories right now. That's how many I have in my head that I haven't told. Because I wanted, you know, we wanted to hear Ronnie, and so we have to.
There's
do
so many
2.
Tim Wilson pieces. Yeah. I mean,
there's so much.
Honestly, maybe we should just make it a 10-minute segment at the end of every show.
You know, we should.
The Tim Wilson, it's called the 10 Wilson because it's 10 minutes long.
There you
do
go,
that, and make another for Shaq.
Yeah. All right, Ron. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Willie. I appreciate it. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jess and Jess. You guys were fantastic.
We'll see you next time.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.